Okay, you are tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are now listening to the Sitting in the Park show. Today is a special show because I have an interview on the phone right now. I have a musician named Timothy Burton who was in a group called Tomorrow's People. Timothy, can you hear me?
I sure can. What's up, Chicago?
Awesome. So we will be talking about the story of Tomorrow's People, and we will be playing some of their music, too. So it should be good, and you should keep tuned. So first of all, could you talk about, are you originally from Chicago?
Yeah, I was originally born and raised from Chicago, South Side.
Okay.
You know, it started as a family group, the four brothers.
So when did you first form your group?
I'm sorry?
When did the group first form?
Well, like I said, we was a family group. It kind of evolved more than perform. You know, we evolved. We started singing in the church, you know, at the Burton Brothers. And then we started singing Christmas carols outside around Christmas time. And then, you know, one thing led to another. My brother Kevin got into the James Brown stuff, and Maurice is kind of like, you know, more of the other singing stuff. So we started singing those songs. And it kind of just, I don't know, you got to the neighborhood, you found bands that was around, a group of guys you grew up with, and they wound up being a backup band, and, you know, it developed into a band at that time we called Soul Taking Over. But I don't think it was something we planned. It just evolved into that.
So originally you just called, did you call yourselves the Burton Brothers, or you just were the Burton Brothers?
Like, well, no, in church we were called the Burton Brothers. You know, I guess we got the label from church, the Burton Brothers. So we kind of stuck with that tag for a while until we got with a band.
Okay. Is that the first time you started singing, like, secular music together when you had the band?
Yes.
So
yes.
Around when did that happen? I think on the back of your LP it says 68 or something.
Yeah, I would say about 65, 66, 67, 68. In that period, there was a lot of people that influenced us. There was so many artists out there at that time that we kind of like. You know, James Brown was one of them, you know, and then the Jackson 5 came out, you know, and then you had the Dramatics. You had all these, you know, and then we was doing the, you know, street corner harmonies as well. I mean, that was just something we did for fun. We went to the parks, and another group from the other side would come over, and they would sing, and then we would sing, and they would sing and do some choreography. And we would, you know, and that was just who did the better performance, just outside on the fly.
Sorry. I was going to ask, what were the names of your brothers, and like, what was the kind of age range between you?
I think it was kind of like almost 2 years between all of us. Kevin being the oldest, Maurice comes after him, then Jerry, and then I was the youngest.
So,
but me and Jerry kind of hung together the most.
Okay. And you mentioned the Jackson 5. You almost, like, kind of formed and then came together playing around the same time they did.
Well, yeah, we actually did. Matter of fact, we did a lot of their material because it was there. And we did the choreography and everything, too. I was young Michael. You know, me and Michael was the same age. You know, he's a little older than me. He's born in August, and I was born in October. We were the same age. So it was just natural. They were so close in Indiana. That's like, we was on the South Side. That's like 15 minutes from us.
So were you aware of them from when they first came out with, like, Big Boy?
Yep. That was one of the songs I sung, too.
Okay.
Yeah, I tell you, when they first came out, man, I was there. I was little Michael to everybody, you know, because our voice was very similar, you know. I guess because we probably was the same. Every boy that age probably sounded like that.
And did you come up with the name Soul Taken Over by then?
Yeah, we met with some. I guess my brothers You know, Kevin was going to high school, Chicago Vocational. Maurice went to Dixon, and each one of them ran into different musicians. So we ran into musician Ronald Hollister and his family. They wound up to be our family growing up. We still talk to them now. But Ronald Hollister, and we got a couple of more characters from the music department at CVS.
Okay.
And so that's kind of how the band formulated, because Kevin was doing the James Brown and the talent shows. That's what it was. Kevin was doing James Brown because he was doing all the moves and all the slides and all the stuff like that. So that's how he bought the band, and we came in and wound up kind of doing it like that.
So did any of you play instruments initially, or you were just the kind of singers?
Yeah, initially in the beginning we was just singing. We were just the front four that did the choreography, the same temptation moves, dramatic move, all that choreography. That was us. That's what we did. Stylistics, we same type thing up front.
So once you formed the band, Soul Taken Over, what types of things did you do? Did you do like talent shows or play at high schools mainly? Like, what did you do?
Yeah, well, the Soul Taken Over, we played, we did some talent show, but no, we played at I think it was called the Green Bunny back in that day.
Yeah.
The Green Bunny, Soul Taken Over, let me see how far we go back. Soul Taken Over, I think we played at the High Chaparral on Stone Island. And I think we played at the, it was a checkerboard off of 55th Street in Garfield, somewhere by the railroad tracks. I remember the train.
Yeah, that it actually recently moved, to near the radio station, but yeah, there was a checkerboard over there. So,
mm-hmm.
So, when you did shows, like you were just like a little kid, right? You were like 9 or something like that.
Yeah, I was a little one, yeah.
So you actually were playing these adult nightclubs at night?
I was. See, my father was the manager of the band.
Okay. Did he come up with the name?
Huh?
Did he come up with the name?
No, I'm not exactly sure. I think the band kind of had something to do with that. I think my father, he got more involved when we start playing out in the lounges. As long as we were playing in the high school, it was cool. But once we started going out into the lounges, that's when Dad came in and he kind of overseen everything.
How often did you practice?
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, the brothers, we sang all the time. We sang. I mean, that was a pastime. We'll just start singing, and we'll start doing choreography, and that was just something we just liked to do. We just did it, and so it was for us as singers and brothers. You know, we knew each other. Like, hey, you take the top, you take the middle, and you get the bottom. Okay, we got it. All right, 1, 2, 3, bam, and we automatically knew where we were, and it was always critiquing each other to make each other, better, so it all sounds good. So we just did that for fun. So when we got a band, all the band had to do was learn the material that we wanted to sing. And most of the bands was from the music department anyway. So they was learning music from a class. So now they got a chance to put the stuff they learned in high school to use in a professional situation. And it did. It worked very well. We really sounded good. We were really good.
What were some of the vocal groups that you emulated? Like, you mentioned the Dramatics, but they didn't really become big until like early 70s.
Yeah.
Like, were the Temptations a big influence on you?
The Temptations, definitely. You had groups, even some earlier groups like the Platters. Those older groups, man, I grew up during the 60s watching all that on TV, so singing and moving and spinning and all that stuff like that, and singing harmonies, that was all those groups, but when my period came up, when I was doing it during the 65 and the 70s, it was the Jackson 5, it was the Stylistics, you know, the Temptations, of course, you know, and then it just developed as more and more people came out trying to do those steps. We was, you know, trying to do them too.
Were there any local Chicago groups that you remember either as influences or as like rivals on talent shows that you remember seeing?
Back in that day, yeah, they would. I can remember the Sons of Slum.
Okay.
I remember those guys. I can't say that I was in competition with these guys. I just, my cousin played for them, the group called The Impressions.
Yeah.
Yeah, Paul Richmond, he played bass for them. So.
That's the amusement park. Paul Richmond is your cousin?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, The Impressions, obviously, they influenced almost everyone in Chicago because they were so important to the Chicago sound.
Yeah.
So how often did you play at nightclubs? Like you said, you played at like the High Chaparral and Green Bunny. Did you play there often or?
I'm sorry, did I say that again?
Did you play at the clubs often or like just a few times? Like how often did you play those nightclubs?
We played, I can remember playing at clubs. See, my father used to be a DJ and his best friend was a DJ. So, I don't think my father was really in the entertainment business to know the clubs to perform in. I just think he came out there to protect us and be like the manager. So he was learning himself. And he had a friend named Tom that worked with him that was a DJ and needed to be DJ player. So I believe they probably went to some of the clubs that they probably used to DJ in. Or they knew somebody who knew somebody at a club and gave us the opportunity to play in clubs.
So, do you know how often? Do you remember how often you did it when you started as Soul Taking Over? Was it like once a week?
I think we probably maybe did 2 gigs a month, maybe.
Something like that. And how were you received? Like, and what did you play in the shows?
Well, the people loved us. They was really impressed with performers, because I was so young and because the Jackson 5 was huge back then, the comparison was automatic from the people. That's who they thought the show they was getting. They were getting a Jackson 5 type show with this band that's playing behind them. You know, so they received it very well. They thought that everybody thought that we was going to be the next sensation to make it.
So, and you mainly did like Jackson 5 type material and kind of Motown stuff in the shows?
Yeah. We did James Brown, James Brown, Jackson 5. Back then, we didn't do the Earth, Wind, and Fire until the 70s. So, we did pretty much the popular popular songs back then, you know, like I'm a girl watcher, watching her go by. You know, we did the war thing, Flipping into Darkness, you know, we played the kind of stuff that, you know, we was playing the typical dance stuff too. But when it came to the harmonies, you know, we was more crooners, should I say. So we would sing some of the more slower stuff like the Temptations and, you know, we do some Marvin Gaye and Kevin, of course, James Brown, and you know, like that.
So how long did the band Soul Taking Over stick together?
Well, that band, we played through, I would believe, 71, 72, because I graduated from grammar school, and we moved to the South Side. Far south, like 112 south. We moved from 72nd and Calumet to 112 south.
How far west after you moved?
It was more straight south.
Okay.
You know, we were still around State Street.
Okay.
We was on 112th and State now instead of 71st and State.
Okay.
So the band didn't live, you know, they lived, you know, it was only his. I mean, it's not like everybody had their own car. I think Ronald Hollister had this Rambler, and then everybody used to pile up in it, you know, and drive around. So it was just, we just moved too far away for the band to continue to be the band. So, and my father got a chance to get this house. So he's like, okay, band house. He made the decision, house. But it was because of him that he had interest in us. He had been handing us instruments all through the period, so we was actually kind of picking up and tinkering on the stuff ourselves a little bit. You know, Kevin was playing it with the bass, and Marius was playing drums, Jerry, you know, doing a little guitar and stuff like that, all while we were singing, though, but we never really tried to play it. We just goofing around. But when we moved, that's when our father said, well, what you guys are going to have to do is you're going to have to start playing behind yourselves.
Okay.
And that's when that started. We looked at it and said, oh, okay.
Did you keep the name Soul Taken Over?
No, we didn't keep the name at that time. We moved on. When we started putting the band together, brothers, we started coming up, and that's when we figured it was a totally different thing. What we were doing now compared to what we were doing. It was something new. It was pretty much the family now doing it ourselves without getting a band to it, and it was happening. So from that, you know, we kind of formulated the word, okay, we're Tomorrow's People then. You know, so the word, it came, and Tomorrow's People stuck.
So you came up with that right after you moved, pretty much, Tomorrow's People?
Yeah, once we started playing and start actually feeling that we can do this, and it started to sound good, and we started writing our own material, and started coming, yeah.
So you never said which instrument you played initially?
Initially, when Tomorrow's People first started, I was playing keyboard and saxophone and singing.
Okay. Were you usually the lead singer in the group before and after?
No, Maurice was the lead singer. Maurice had this really silky, mellow voice that made the women go crazy. That man, he had a really good voice, so we definitely put him out front. And Kevin, the oldest brother, he had that really high tenor. I mean, he was singing them really, really high notes and stuff like that. And he's, you know, so them two kind of, and plus he did the James Brown.
Okay.
So me and Jerry pretty much, you know, played the guitar and sung background, the harmonies and stuff like that.
So did you...
Every now and then we'll sing a song.
And you started writing your own material too, you said?
Yeah.
Did you all write it together, or was there one person in the group that was, like, the songwriter a lot at the time?
Me and my brother Jerry, we was always, we were the closest of all the brothers musically. So... Once we found out that we can get a small little multi-track cassette player and we was able to record, we started writing right away. You know, right away we started writing, coming up with different songs and stuff like that. Once the band evolved again, because there was another evolution in that Tomorrow's People part where we start adding more people to everything, was because the music was changing. You know, we was going through a period where music was actually, it was changing.
It was getting funkier for one.
Yeah, anyway. We went through a, you gotta, the best way I can explain it is, I was born in the 60s where everything was doo-wop. You know, so I'm singing this doo-wop, beginning as singers, and then all of a sudden, late 60s, early 70s, music just changed, so we had to change. We kind of evolved by adding other musicians, and that's the growth of Tomorrow People came, because we started doing better live shows, and we started getting bigger venues, stuff like that, really getting some great musicians playing in the band that made Tomorrow People a Southside name.
Could I ask a few questions about the early version of the group? First of all, how did you come up with the name Tomorrow's People? I, if you said it, I missed it. I'm sorry.
You know what? I was the youngest of everybody.
Okay.
I was the youngest, so I would probably I couldn't tell you which one of them, between Maurice, Kevin, yeah, whatever. I know my dad was always the one that was the one that had the final say in whatever happened. You know, but I think it must have came up inside the family on the higher up.
Okay.
Because, you know, that, to my knowledge.
Okay, and then another question is, you said you started writing songs when you got a multi-track cassette recorder. I'm wondering if you kept any of those old tapes, because it would be incredible to hear if you did.
It sure would. Oh, wow. You know what? I did find a reel that Tomorrow's People recorded, that we recorded in the studio, and we never released it. It was the one, we was working on a new album with the new musicians, and we used to play these songs in our shows, and the people loved them. So we decided we was going to go record and so on. So we recorded these songs and never did anything with it. And
that was before or after the album?
That was after the album.
Okay.
That was getting, when we, like I said, we got our show started developing, and it got bigger, and then we became more like an Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Okay.
Because I switched instruments at that time. Music changed, things happened, man, and we became, you know, second to Earth, Wind, and Fire, pretty much on the South Side. We grew to that. It just evolved. It just kept evolving into what it landed out to be.
Yeah, like, I'm interested, so, in finding out, you said when you initially were Tomorrow's People, you started playing your own instruments, and you brought in other musicians who joined your group. Do you know where all the other musicians came from? Were they from your neighborhood?
Right. Well, yeah. Basically, when I first brought in to the group, I brought my cousin Alvin in, Alvin Parker, and he was actually playing percussion, but he wound up being a drummer, which made Maurice get off the drums and be up front. And then I switched to bass guitar because the music was more funkier and I got to be more of a funky bass player. So I put Kevin up front. And then I was going to high school, and that's where I learned how to read and write music. I met a lot of other musicians that was, you know, back in those days, it was lots and lots of bands, and people want to be in bands and stuff. So I met a lot of my musician friends from high school, and they actually come see my show and brought them in, and, you know, they fit.
What school were you going to at the time?
Chicago Vocational High School, 87th and right off Jeffrey.
Okay. So pretty much like there were people from your school, and you said they came and saw your shows, and you recruited them.
Yes, horn players, you know, drummers, you know, yeah.
So by the mid-70s, like how many people did you have in the group?
By the mid-70s going is after, you know, I would probably say, because we did a show at the Park West. It had to be almost 11 people.
Wow. Maybe,
we had a horn section too, a three-piece horn section. I think we had two keyboard players, and we might have had two guitar players, two like that, with the drummer. So yeah.
And you said you were playing bass at the time?
Yes.
Okay. So, when did you finally end up going to the studio to record, and how did that happen?
Well, we, mind you, once again, I was a young kid. We had been playing, and somehow we must have got introduced to this guy who had a record label, Stage Production. His name was Willie Nance. And he liked the band. And I guess we wind up, we want to record the CD. That's what the album. So that's how that came out to be, as far as that concerned. So I knew we had to get the material, stuff like that. So we gathered all the material for the album. So about time it came to record the album, I was just graduating from high school. Matter of fact, my dad, on my graduation night, as I walked across the stage and picked up my diploma, when I walked down the stairs, my dad grabbed my hand and we went straight to the car and straight to the studio. Record that album. I missed all the parties.
Yeah, that was that in 76 or 75?
That was in 76 when I graduated.
Okay. So actually we've been talking for a while. How about I play a song off your album and we can talk some more?
Okay, sounds good.
So the record I'm going to play now is the one song that got released as a single. This is called Hurry On Up Tomorrow.
All right.
Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are listening to the Sitting in the Park show. Today I have special guest Timothy Burton, who was in a group called Tomorrow's People. The record I just played was the Tomorrow's People with their only single that was released off of their album in 1976. That track was called Hurry On Up Tomorrow. So you guys had pretty nice, it was like a nice ballad. You guys had nice harmony on that track, too.
Yeah, I was just listening. Like I told you, my brother Kevin, he had that high tenor thing going, man. He was like a little bird. And then Maurice, those are two guys that was up front, you know, and they did a really, really good job. They did a good job on every show.
And do you remember who wrote that song?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I was a little guy. My job was to play it, sing it, make it sound good.
And, And you had told me that the person who owned the record label was a guy named Willie Nance.
Yeah.
Do you know how you got in contact with him?
Well, once again, I think he heard us perform, or someone from his company heard us perform, and he liked us. You know, once again, we kind of sounded like the Jacksons, you know, in our harmonies and stuff like that. And I think that we were playing too. We was actually playing and singing. Oh. And Maurice was singing like that, playing drums.
Oh wow! So you did it in what? Like you didn't do multiple takes to get the vocals and the.
No. I'm in a live situation.
Oh, okay.
So he's seen us live, and that's where it came up about coming to the studio and recording. So, but I do believe back in those days, times were different. I remember a guy, and I think he sent them out there. A guitar player coming out to our house. And playing, you know, a song. And I do kind of remember that, and I remember us learning a song, and then we took it and did it our way, you know, and took it and learned it and put the music behind it, and we started playing it. So I do remember that happening.
Yeah, like I was telling you that a couple of the songs on your album were done previously by other Chicago groups, like that song, It Ain't Fair.
Mm-hmm.
And Lovers to Friends was done by a group called the Sadigans that I interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
So you were saying that you thought the songs came from that guitarist, like, teaching you those songs?
Yeah, I will believe it, because that was the only way we would have gotten them. Because I've never heard anybody perform those songs but us.
Okay.
So I remember, you know, we, you know, learned. I remember the guy coming in the basement, and that's how it happened. You know, we did the song, we played the music, and the witness dude recorded it.
But you don't remember the guy's name, and you never saw him again, really?
No, it was, you know, he was from, just like I never seen the girl on the cover of the album.
Okay.
They all came through Willie Nance. You know, he had like a, you know, a record label. It was a modeling company, actually. And then I guess he was breaking off into more of the record label also. So I think he was using his same clientele of people for the modeling with the music.
So the girl on your album cover, the naked girl, is a model, one of his models?
Yes. It's one of his models from his modeling company.
Did you ever have to play like fashion shows for him?
No, I never did fashion shows for him. I've done fashion shows, but not for him.
Okay. So you must have been... Sorry.
Willie didn't do anything outside the studio. I mean, his thing was just the recording, the album. You know, he didn't have no outside influence with us at all.
So on the album, are you the guys, the musicians and the singers?
Yes, we are.
Do you remember everybody that plays on that album?
I sure do. My brother Kevin Burton, my brother Maurice Burton, Jerry Burton, myself, Tim Burton. We had Toby Williams, I think, playing congos. I think that's it.
So you weren't like 11 people on the album, just like 5-6 people?
Yeah, on the album it was just basically the four brothers, because Maurice played the drums, Kevin played the bass, Jerry played the guitar, I played the organ and saxophone. And then we had a congo player come in and play congo. So that was it.
Were you really excited that you were finally getting material released?
Oh, I was very giddy. We had posters out, you know, like we jumping off of the wall. That was all in a record store and stuff like that. Music playing on the radio, man. Yeah, man. I was all smiles. I was a happy kid.
So your record actually got played on the radio. Was it which song did they play?
Hurry On Up Tomorrow.
Okay.
Hurry On Up Tomorrow. That one was on because they had the posters out. Hurry On Up Tomorrow. So they kind of like pushed that a little bit.
Did you save any of those posters? Those would be incredible to see too.
Yeah, well, they sure would. With two phones, they sure would.
So that single got some play. Did you start doing more club gigs as a result of your recording?
I would think after recording, I think that's when the band started to evolve because people, you know, seeing that we had an album out, they heard, you know, it was getting some airplay, and they knew we exist. They kind of knew we exist more so.
Okay.
And then from that, it was, you know, it just, more people, you know, they loved our singing, they wanted to get involved, you know, but they were musicians. So, which was cool, because we wind up giving up our musicianship, well, most of my brothers, to become front singers.
Okay. And
they didn't mind, but we started as singers. They didn't mind going back to going up front again.
So did you develop, like, nice choreography? Like, who was the dance? Was there, like, one guy that was the dancer in the group?
Yeah, well, we all actually, I acted out, but Kevin and Maurice was probably, because they were the older brothers. And they, you know, they was out there in high school, you know, so they, you know, doing these different steps. So they would come back, and then, you know, we had already been doing steps anyway, kind of as Burton, you know, the Burton brothers anyway. So it was just perfecting them, you know, how we can make it look good. Can we spin, you know? Okay, you spin this way. You put your arm up, you drop down. You know, we were doing all kinds of, and then come back to the microphone and say we were trying to do all kind of stuff like that. So what happened was once it evolved and those people moved up front in position, and because of school, I was taught music orchestration and like in different sections. So in each section had like section rehearsal. So I brought that same information back to the band and made everybody go into section rehearsal. So you had vocal rehearsals, you had choreography rehearsals, you know, you had rhythm section rehearsals, you had horn section rehearsals. And then after they did that, then you come back and have a full rehearsal. And that's kind of how we did it. And each rehearsal had its own goal to accomplish doing it before we come back to full band.
And did you have uniforms also?
Oh, yes. My father worked at a company called Hart Schaffner and Marks at that time, and it was a clothing manufacturer. They made all, like, Christian Dior's, and they made all the suits and sent it to the people who put their labels on it, like Christian Dior's and stuff like that. So what he used to do, he's been making our uniforms since we were little kids, you know. So he just kept, you know, he'll break out the sewing machine and make a new one. And then when he didn't have time to make some, we'll go down to Jewtown.
Okay.
And we'll pick up some outfits alike and come back out, you know. So we always had like a costume performance as the four brothers, always. So that just evolved, you know, into... When it got to, like, mid-70s, when, like I said, 72, 73, 74, that's when Earth, Wind & Fire came out. And so by that time, our sound was kind of going that way until the point we had the same instrumentation as them. So our father made uniforms because now he done seen Earth, Wind & Fire. And he like, I can make a uniform like that. So it was more like a clothing challenge for him. And he'll break the sewing machine out and bam, bam, bam. And he made, I have pictures stage pictures that I came up with of us with those costumes that he put together for us.
That's cool. I'd love to see some of those photos. So what you're describing is like your group became more professional and with your practices and your looks and your performances. Did you ever tour, or you only played in Chicago?
Yeah, see, that was the thing. See, we enjoy playing the music. We enjoy, you know, sounding the way we sounded and going to playing in the clubs. But we didn't have the knowledge. And my father was the manager, and he had been getting a gig, but he really didn't have that music knowledge of where to go or who to look up with, you know, like a booking agent or something like that. So basically all our work that we did was just around the city, just around the south side, you know, of Chicago. We might have got some on the north side through his friend or something like that, but most of it was just the south side.
Okay. We've been talking for a while. Let me play another track from your album, and then we'll talk some more. Is that okay?
Sounds good.
So this is another nice ballad off of the album. This track is Lovers to Friends.
From lovers to friends,
Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You're listening to the Sitting in the Park show. We are in the middle of an interview with a musician named Timothy Burton, who was in a group called Tomorrow's People from the South Side of Chicago. And that track was a song called Lovers to Friends that was off of their album, a really nice cut. So, Tim, did you do that song live also a lot?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Maurice was the crooner. He was the crooner, and all the women going crazy.
Okay.
And then Kevin got to singing his part, and everybody just dropped.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And pretty much the only track that they didn't play any tracks off the album directly on the radio. It was just the single that got some play, right? Hurry on up tomorrow.
Yeah, that's the probably the one that got played that I've heard on the radio.
Do you know what happened with the album and with the guy Willie Nance that had the Stage Productions? Like, did he just not want to release any more singles, or he didn't know how to promote the album well enough?
From the get go, I think he might have thought he could do more than what he could do at the time, because like you said, he was just starting off with this label, trying to start off doing a music thing, because he was doing the modeling thing. So, I mean, and he only made so many copies, had so many copies made, and I guess he lacked the connections or to get it to go mainstream. He got it to go, you know, in certain Chicagoland area, but not very far.
Yeah, I think especially in Chicago, it was very tough to break into, like, an independent artist into the radio. Like, they had tight control over, like, what got played and who got played. So it was very difficult for an independent. Like, there was a lot of excellent independently released recordings that never got play because of that in Chicago.
But yeah, well, one thing that happened good out of that whole thing, at least the album nowadays is one of the rare collector's items.
Yeah, it's like sells for like hundreds of dollars, right?
Yes, it does. I'm happy.
So, you were saying earlier in the interview that you actually ended up recording again in the late 70s. What's the story with that?
Yes, well, by that time, like I said, our sound had changed. You know, it had evolved more into the. It was more Earth, Wind, and Fire-ish kind of up-tempo kind of thing like that. And we got some great musicians that played with us that wanted to showcase their talent as well. We had a guitarist named Skippy McClure, who later on went to play with Tyrone Davis. We had wrote some originals, and, you know, it's all our originals. See, Tomorrow's People, we was an original band. We wrote a whole bunch of original songs, and we performed our own original songs that people liked and danced to. So we never got a chance to record them, though, but we was able to play them, and people enjoyed it. So we finally went in the studio to record a couple of the songs that we should do on our shows that everybody liked. We got them recorded. Magical Love was one of them.
Okay.
I wrote one on that one called Trying to Make It to the Top. And it had to be, it was one more, I think. I can't think of it on top of my head right now.
Do you remember what year that was? Like 79?
It had to be 79.
And were all three of your brothers still in the group?
At that time?
Yeah.
Yeah, the brothers, we everybody was with the band. That was the only band I've ever played with. It was a family band until it disbanded in about 83, I think it was.
So at that time, you went to a studio and you paid for your own recording session. Is that right?
Yeah, I think something like that. Some kind of way we got a deal on some time or something like that. And it was out in Maywood, a studio out in Maywood.
Do you remember what the name of the studio was?
not right off the top of my head. It was right off First Avenue, and I couldn't tell you right now. It was so long ago.
So you recorded the material and mixed it and stuff, and what happened? Like, did you plan to try to shop it around, or you wanted to release it yourselves? Like, why? What were your plans, and why didn't it get released?
I guess the plan was to record it. And we did that, and we got it. And I guess at that point, I guess we were supposed to decide what we were going to do after that. You know, and we never developed to an after that. We recorded it.
Okay. So pretty much.
Another thing I think it was that we sounded so much better live, and then you try to recapture that in the studio, and I think it was something lacking there, because it had a live energy was great, and in the studio it was kind of like, how would you say it, a weighed down version of it,
watered down
version of it, yeah, you know, so.
So, you said, so it didn't get released, and you said the group stayed together for another 4 years, is that right?
Yes.
So, did you continue to perform, like, in similar clubs?
No, we started getting better jobs, because we had better musicians, you know. By that time, you know, we had, you know, drummer like Robert Shipley, who's now in Vegas, he used to work with Natalie Cole, and who else we had in our band? We had the guys from Henry Love. What's the New Birth? New Birth. They came up here one time to help us get our show together for a show we had at the Park West. You know, so we were starting to do bigger shows, you know, that, you know, once people start knowing of us, because we've been around for a long time. And we used to play at this club on the south side of Chicago called, the Orbit House. And that was kind of like the neighborhood, 127 South Halsted. That was like, they had a house band that played there called Brass Bullet.
Okay.
Which is BBI now. And we used to come there and play there. It would always be like a competition between the two bands. But they know it wasn't no competition. Tomorrow's People was the best band back in the days.
Okay. So were you doing music as a career at that point?
Well, at that point, I was still young. I was in high school. I graduated high school in 76, and then so I lived at home with mom and dad. You know, I still didn't have no responsibility. So, you know, the music had been everything I liked and wanted to do. So, you know, I did the music thing as much as, matter of fact, I had a scholarship when I graduated. I had a scholarship to go to Kentucky State University. And it was I got a chance to go there earlier to check the school out, you know, and I wanted to go. A lot of my classmates was going. But I had became the leader of Tomorrow's People. I took all my knowledge from, you know, orchestrating and stuff like that in high school and applied it to this band, and now this band, it was professional. So now, graduation time for me to go to, you know, the college, four-year college. If I went away, I was pretty much the bass player, the person, the band would have disbanded pretty much at that time. So my father didn't make a decision for me. He just let me make my own decision at that time. If you want to go to college, you can. You understood? But I knew what was at stake. I knew if I go to college, the band was it. And we just released an album and all that stuff. I said, I can't go nowhere now. This is getting ready to happen. So I choose to go. I went to a city college. At that time, it was called Loop City College. And then I stayed. But I made a decision at that time. The music was what I wanted to do.
Okay. And were your brothers also living at home?
At that time, they were in and out.
Okay.
Especially Jerry. Jerry was the one who flew the coop early.
Okay.
And then Kevin would go and come. I was always there.
Okay, and so you said the group officially broke up by 83?
Yes.
Did something happen, or you just decided to stop doing it?
As I was saying before, we were players of the music and performers of the music, and we were so busy perfecting our craft, we didn't really learn anything about the music business.
Okay.
You know, about getting gigs, and we left all that up to my dad, who really didn't know himself, but he learned as he went along. But my father was a working man as well. He worked a job hard all his life. And between that and maybe cigarettes and stuff like that, it took its toll on him, and he wound up getting cancer.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so once he started getting sick and he knew he was sick, he couldn't do it any longer, he kind of told the band that. And his hopes were that somebody in the band would be able to step up and take over and keep it going.
Okay.
But nobody was even close to doing even half the job that he did, let alone try to do anything more.
Okay.
So that's kind of how it happened. Once he couldn't do it no more, that was it.
But you continued to do music?
I did. I continued to, as a bass player, I continued to grow as a bassist, and I wind up doing some work, sub work for a guy named Tony Brown in the city of Chicago, downtown Tony Brown. And from there, I met a lot of characters. I met Richie Davis, Kevin Smith. You know, I met a lot of cats in the 80s and started playing jazz out at the Jazz Bulls and stuff like that. And I got labeled as the new kid on the block because prior to that, I've only played with my family.
Okay.
Never been to the North Side. So here I come now playing all these North Side frequent gigs, and everybody knew each other, but I was the new guy. I was tagged the new kid on the block. So, and that's when I started getting a lot of gigs and meeting a lot of different people. I'm actually playing with those guys after 20, 30 years. They call themselves the Chicago Cats now. And we do a lot of corporate weddings in the Chicagoland area. So I often come back to Chicago visiting and just reminiscing with those guys because it takes me back, like I said, 30 years. And this radio show is taking me 20 more years past that.
Yeah, thanks for telling your story. I appreciate it. So did any of your brothers continue to do music?
Well, naturally, we started off as singers. So I'm quite sure we all can sing, and if you put the four of us in a room, we can still look at it. Okay, you take four, you know, you take top, take the middle, and then I got the bottom. You know, okay, I sing the lead. Okay, got it. We'll always do that. You know, my brother Jerry, he came up to the Green Bay area, and he started a karaoke company.
Okay.
And so he's been singing and entertaining, doing karaoke, and that's how he keeps his singing thing going. And he's singing a whole bunch of Rat Pack, you know, Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr., I mean, Neil Diamond. He's singing. And me up here, I have my only thing. You know, I started a Trackmaster T. You can put that in Google, Trackmaster T, Google, and it kind of show you everything that I've been doing. I'm currently working with a band called Focus, and we're heading out to Seattle, Washington, and play at the Hemp Fest August the 20th and 21st. So we're traveling.
What kind of music? Is it jazz?
Oh, that's reggae, actually. Reggae, ska, jazz, funk.
Okay.
Yeah, if you like a group like, if you like Police and Sublime, and even Bob Marley, you'll love us.
Okay. So besides your brother doing karaoke, you're the only person still playing an instrument and performing, is that right?
Well, me and my brother Jerry, you know, I always take him out of retirement. Every now and then he'll come out and we might do a boat cruise. And me and my brother Jerry, we were singing karaoke together, so we'll entertain just the two of us. So he'll put his guitar on and we'll do a show, but we're actually entertaining more than being a guitarist. So we've done cruise ships up here. We do a duo show, me and my brother, where we take maybe a karaoke machine or something like that, and we just sing songs, just me and him. So he's still in it. Not full time. He dabbles, you know, and I keep him playing. So he still has a guitar, got an amp. He's ready for whenever I tell him come out of retirement or he get a corporate gig and he need to make some money. So he strap on his guitar and say, come on.
And you and none of your brothers live in Chicago anymore, is that right?
Yeah, we moved out of Chicago. Kevin live in the Milwaukee suburb of Milwaukee, I think, Waukesha. Marius and Jerry live in Green Bay. And I now live in Menasha, Wisconsin. Yeah. All of us in Wisconsin, though.
Okay. that's unusual for at least the people I talk to. That's...
Yeah, we close enough, but far enough.
Well, I got to say thanks so much for being on the radio and telling your story. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much. Like I said, you just took me down memory lane, and I enjoy every part of it.
And do you have any last words for the listening audience?
Hey, Chicago lad, don't forget where the music comes from. That old school music is still live today. All right? Jack Master T, Tim Burton, thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks again. And this last track that I'm going to play is off of the album you released in 76. This track is called It Ain't Fair.